Well, hey, everyone. This week's culture segment is a special privilege. And as you all know, we like to tie our weeks together kind of with themes usually and have our show reflect what we're saying on the website with our articles and kind of what we're blogging about. And this week is no exception. I have Dr. Julie Slattery here in the studio. Hey, Julie.
Hey, Lisa.
Good to have you here with your fun leather jacket. That's pretty cool.
Feeling free.
Well, you know, you had your days on the Focus on the Family Daily broadcast, and now you have arrived. You are again here on Boundless. I mean, this is where it really happens.
It's what I've aspired to, definitely.
That's what I'm saying. And, you know, we were here. Many of you will remember Julie when we had her not too long ago in our roundtable talking about what our expectations were going into marriage as far as our little lists and who we thought we needed or who we thought we wanted, I guess, and then discovering after marriage, oh, this is maybe what I needed. So you didn't need the guy that was just like you, the hyper type A personality and the one that was going to be, you know, kind of your cookie cutter male counterpart.
Oh, the Lord saved me from that.
He saved you from another you.
Yes. So he saved our children from two of me. That would have been really bad.
Oh, that's good. That's very good. Well, you are also, and I don't even know if we've really tapped. I mean, obviously, you know, being a doctor, Julie is a psychologist and was for a long time kind of our resident parenting and to some extent marriage expert here at Focus on the Family, and is now off on a brand new venture. Tell us a little bit about that, just as we kind of kick off here, what you're doing now.
Well, I co-founded a ministry with Linda Dillo called Authentic Intimacy, and Lisa, I sometimes wake up and say, how in the world did this happen? Mm-hmm. Because it wasn't my plan. I never dreamed about leaving Focus. I never dreamed about starting a ministry for sure. And I definitely never thought about starting a ministry for women, particularly on the areas of intimacy mm-hmm. and sexual intimacy. But God just moved like a freight train mm-hmm. over the last probably 18 months and made it so clear, made the path very clear for us. And so we're just off and running even after 4 months. Just the things that he's enabled us to do to reach women around the world has been pretty incredible.
Yeah, well, that is great. And you are no stranger to talking about this subject, that is for sure. For those of you who don't know, Julie is the author of No More Headaches, Enjoying Sex and Intimacy in Marriage. She's also authored a bunch of other books, including Beyond the Masquerade, which is great. I would definitely recommend it, especially to you women. But, you know, just done a lot of stuff, written for Focus, and like I said, had the presence on a lot of our audio channels as well. So we are, because we're talking about, we're on the tail end of our sex series within our article kind of slate. And I hope you guys have been reading those throughout the summer, because I think it's just a great narrative of God's design for sex and what that looks like, whether we're living out sexuality as a single or whether we're moving into marriage. And so we're going to talk a little bit today about one of the questions we get a lot from some of you listeners is, okay, so, you know, here I am, I signed my pledges and I, you know, have my purity ring. I've been wearing it for 10, 15 years now. And now I met someone and we're getting married and now I'm just supposed to go from like 0 to 60, and here I, you know, I just what is sex, I'm not sure I know what so we felt we had to bring someone like you and Julie to kind of help clear some of the clutter and really give a vision for what this can be like and how it can be done well heading into marriage, and you know, without either just disintegrating into a puddle of fear or being some kind of like weird, you know, freak about it or something. So, yeah. So the first question I want to ask you, because we're going to have a lot of people here, you know, some people listening aren't even dating yet, and mm-hmm. they kind of like, what do I need to know this for? And then other people are dating, but they kind of don't know, okay, how do you progress in this kind of conversation? So I want to start out by asking you, where really are the lines about where this conversation should start and how it should start? I mean, really, how, you know, what should you talk about before marriage when it comes to sex, knowing that if you get married, that's going to be part of your experience, but you don't want to be, you know, again, people will throw up the, you know, don't awaken love before it so desires.
Yeah.
Where, I mean, help us navigate that a little bit.
Well, I think there are really three stages before you get to marriage. One of them is dating, mm-hmm. and that's just checking the other person out, seeing if this relationship has potential. And I really think in that stage, you don't talk about sex at all mm-hmm. because there's no benefit to it. There's mm-hmm. nothing good that can come from talking about sex with somebody you're dating. Mm-hmm. It can only open up doors that are not ready to be opened.
Right.
And the second stage, which I think a lot of people don't talk about, but you probably do on this show, is pre-engagement. And pre-engagement is when this relationship is getting serious. And we are headed towards a commitment. We're talking about marriage, but we're not engaged yet. And I think that's a time to start revealing some of the things that this other person might need to know about your past. Mm-hmm. Things like, I've been sexually active before, I've had an abortion, I was sexually abused. And the reason I say that this is a good time to do that is because once you're engaged, you're really making a statement to that other person and to your friends and your family that we're committed. Mm-hmm. Even though we don't have the ring on our finger yet, we're committed. And I feel like that's an important time to work through some of those potential red flags. People that save that information for after engagement or after marriage sometimes will feel like, wow, you held this back on me. I really should have known that. We should have been working on this before. Hmm. And then that third stage, Lisa, is engagement. And I'm all for very short engagements. Mm-hmm. I think the work should be done in that pre-engagement stage. And then engagement, you can start working with a counselor or a pastor to actually be talking about sex. How does this work between us? What kind of things do we have to resolve? How can we start planning and looking forward to a sexual relationship? That's the advice that I would give. And I think when you get those out of order, you can have problems either sharing too much or too little.
Yeah. So let's back up a little bit and talk about sexual pasts. You know, when you're dealing with someone that you maybe know or suspect, you know, may have been abused or had some kind of history, what's appropriate for you to address? I mean, how can you even ferret out if this person has had a sufficient amount of counseling, if they're, you know, beyond it, if they're in a healthy place to move into another relationship? Because what if they're still in denial? How do you even know?
Are you talking about like a pre-engagement stage?
Right. Yeah. So this person, like, you know, I don't know if I want to move towards marriage with this person because they still have baggage that they have not even opened up yet from the past.
And that very well may be the case both with men and women. When you've been sexually abused, a lot of the symptoms and even some of the memories don't surface until after you're married or even after you have children. It's very common, say around the late 20s, early 30s, for women to start realizing things from their past that they kind of knew were there but never really dealt with. So when you make a commitment to someone, there's a chance that you're committing to someone who's been wounded beyond what they even know. And I'd say it goes both ways. There are men who have been abused, or men, for example, who have been addicted to pornography and too ashamed to share that, and wives find out after the fact. You look for red flags when you're serious in a relationship. You look for fears of intimacy. You look for someone maybe who's even hypersexual in terms of being focused on that all the time. You ask discerning questions. You go through premarital counseling and you just ask the Lord to reveal. Mm-hmm. And then once you get married, you are committed to that person. That means no matter what surfaces, they might find that they have a brain tumor. You're still committed. Mm-hmm. They might find out that they have something in their past they haven't dealt with. You're committed to that as well. But as much as you can find out up front really helps you adjust your expectations.
Okay. So we have seen in recent studies that up to 80% of self-described evangelicals are saying that they've now had sex before marriage. That's just mm-hmm. the statistic that's out there. And I want to know, one of the biggest arguments that our culture throws up is this idea of, well, you've got to have sex before you're married. Quite frankly, you need to live together before you're married because you have to know if you're sexually compatible. Okay, that is just going to strike fear in every Christian's heart because we don't want to be sexually incompatible with our spouse. Okay, what does that mean? Is that just a straw man, or how can you find that out and still be pure in light of that?
Oh, I think it's a straw man. Okay. I mean, I've talked to couples who say, before we were married, we had a great sexual relationship. And then we got married and it's terrible, or we had kids and we're totally incompatible now. So some of it is stages of life, mm-hmm. learning together and growing together. Your hormones change, your circumstances change. That's part of it. And some of it is, you know, I've really learned and believe that sex is about more than being compatible. It's about really learning what it is to love someone. Hmm. You know, if you think about it, Lisa, we are all incompatible as male and female. I mean, you look at how the female body's designed and how the male body's designed sexually, and you're like, God, you just made us incompatible. Why didn't you make us with the same type of desires and have us be aroused the same way? And God made us incompatible, I believe, for a reason, because a great sex life is impossible without learning to be unselfish over time. Mm-hmm. And for that reason, it doesn't matter who you marry. It's going to stretch you to learn to say, this is what I want, or this is how I feel. But for a time, I'm going to learn to lay that down, to learn how to really love my spouse. And couples that do that well, when they're 10 years, 15 years, 30 years into marriage, have a great sexual relationship because they've learned to love one another.
Okay. So one of the big ways I think that I've heard that this incompatibility shows up or manifests itself is in expectations. Mm-hmm. Because I've had, you know, I had a friend who I think went through premarital counseling, and they heard some kind of study of when they surveyed all these men of like how often they expected to have sex after marriage. And most men said every day.
Yeah.
And then they surveyed women and they said 4 to 5 times a month.
Yeah.
And so that is just setting yourself up for a few conversations right there going into marriage. So how do couples even come to this understanding of, oh, yeah, okay, I'm going to have to be unselfish? I mean, how can they even find a sex life that is, you know, compatible in that sense or mutually satisfying?
That you work at it. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the best analogy that I know of, and I know it's kind of a stretch of the imagination, but I think of Legos. You know, I think of sex like that, because when you go to buy Legos, you look on the cover of the box and you say, oh, that's what I want. I want that airplane or I want that castle. And if you think you're going to open up that box of Legos and find the airplane or the castle, you're going to be very disappointed. I don't care what you see on the outside of that box of what you think sex is going to be, even if you've tried it out, even if you've lived together, when you get married, you're opening up a box of a bunch of pieces that don't fit together. And if you anticipate that you're going to have a ready-made great sexual intimacy, again, I don't care if you've lived together for 5 years. Research shows that things change once you get married. There's new stresses. Your body's aging differently. You're still going to have problems. And the trick is, okay, this is the kind of gift that is not ready-made. It's something that we learn to build together. And so I've seen couples, for example, over the years deal with things like pornography. And one has learned to extend forgiveness to the other. And one has learned to confess with humility to the other. That's building a deep kind of intimacy and love. You know, I've seen couples deal with vast differences in sexual desire. One of them has to lay down their desire and slow down a little bit. The other one has to be interested in sex when he or she isn't that interested. That's teaching an unselfishness that the world can't hold a candle to. And when you start to see that God is really interested in you learning how to love another person deeply, and that sex is really the celebration of that, then you start letting go of all this who's compatible with who. Mm-hmm. You know, it's about who you're developing inside of yourself as a lover. Mm-hmm. And I mean, look, for example, Hollywood. Okay, they can have anyone. And they fall in love and they're totally sexually compatible with this person. I mean, you know, Tom Cruise jumping on couches for a year or two, and that wanes and there's nothing to sustain them. Mm-hmm. Well, the same is true with us. If you fall for this flash in the pan, we've got this chemistry, that will wane one way or another. Mm-hmm. And it's a matter of what are you building underneath that?
Mm-hmm. It's good. So let's talk, let's just wade into this area, you know, especially on the front end of it, of, you know, prep for the wedding night and what to expect there. Because I think a lot of people have taken their cues from Hollywood. And when you see stuff like this happen in the movies, it is seamless. It is usually orchestrated to music. It usually involves well-dressed people who are very attractive and know exactly what to do.
Yeah.
And most of my friends that I've talked to who have gotten married and have sex, that is not their experience. And they're like, either I was doing something wrong or I didn't have the script for this or something.
Yeah.
Because and it's funny because we have these expectations. One of my friends, she was so cute. You know, she and her husband, you know, both believers, struggled to remain sexually pure. You know, they held their boundaries. And it was, you know, and they felt like, she told me, she said, I just told my husband that if we made it to our wedding night and the Lord returned, we were doing it on the way up, she said, because we waited.
Yeah.
And so, but a lot of couples find that, you know, maybe that first night or that first week even is kind of a disappointment.
Yeah.
And so where does a couple, both male and female, start in figuring out what do they need to know? Who do they ask? I mean, what's appropriate to ask? Where does this process even start?
Well, I think we've got great resources available nowadays, great books and, you know, podcast series like this one. I think people are more open to talk to their friends mm-hmm. about what to expect. So I think that there are a lot of ways of getting open conversation going that is very appropriate. But I think some of it is just anticipating that you're starting a journey together. And it might be a great start to the journey, and it might be a terrible start to the journey. But, you know, I'll just share personally, our honeymoon was a disaster. Hmm. You know, starting with the fact that we didn't have a bed, and I won't go into that. But,
oh, no.
But it was very painful, and we were not even able to consummate our marriage on our honeymoon, which was devastating for me. It was devastating for Mike. But I can remember... you know, a time during our honeymoon where I was crying, he was kind of in his own little corner of the room feeling like a complete failure, and I just saw him reading his Bible, and he came over to me, and he just said something to me like, you know, we've got our whole lives to figure this out. Let's not let this get in the way. Mm-hmm. And that just set the tone for us to recover from a honeymoon that could have been just devastating, to think about the fact that whether things go well or they don't, you've got a lifetime to figure this out. And so the most important thing is don't take any sort of failure on the honeymoon as too telling, like, mm-hmm. oh no, we're going to have a terrible sex life, or I failed my wife or my husband. But to have the attitude of, God, you've given us a lifetime, and thank you that the greatest sex of our life is not going to be on our honeymoon. It's mm-hmm. just going to get better and better and better. We have all this to look forward to. The couples that get tripped up in that first year of marriage and they start blaming and they start letting those seeds of failure take root are the ones that can take a honeymoon experience and really make it devastating rather than just something to laugh about later and build on.
Hmm. Yeah. So what would you say, Julie, in couples that you've talked to, and you talked about kind of the inherent incompatibility that we have, what would you say are the biggest misconceptions, you know, for the male and for the female, for the husband and the wife, going into a sexual relationship that they're going to have to just work out through some kind of process?
Well, I think you mentioned one of them, which is the idea that once I have the wedding and I put the ring on my finger, I'm going to feel this freedom. Mm. You know, truth be told, you've been pairing sexual pleasure with shame your whole life. And that's whether you've given into sexual temptation and you've experienced that pleasure and you feel totally guilty about it, or whether you've told yourself, no, I'm not supposed to look at that. No, I'm not supposed to feel that. I shouldn't want that. You've been pairing that those sexual feelings and thoughts with shame and trying to shut them down. And that will not change on your wedding night. It can begin to change, but it's going to take you time. It might take you years until you really get to the point where you experience the fact that God gives you permission to enjoy the greatest pleasure. And I was telling you off air about the DVD series Passion Pursuit that we just completed. It's all about women getting permission from God, even after they've been married for 20 or 30 years, to enjoy what God has said is beautiful. And I've talked to women who have struggled with this for decades, and they've never really realized the root that this has taken in their heart. And it plays out in many different ways.
Yeah. We've had a number of conversations, I think, in the Christian world, especially in the last year with the release of the Driscoll's book and whatnot, about what is appropriate within marriage, you know, sexually. What's your take on that dilemma? Because I know we get a lot of questions from readers that are like, well, I don't know. Is everything okay within marriage?
Yeah.
Should I? What if I'm not comfortable with that? What if I'm not? I mean, you might have, you know, some girl who feels like she's just the cold fish. She was just the prim and proper, whatever. And then a guy who had a sexual past, and he's just like, woo, everything's permissible, you know? Yeah. So how do they come to the same place on that?
Well, I think, you know, you ask yourself three questions. First of all, does the Bible say not to do this? And there are certain things the Bible says not to do, and they're pretty clear, and I don't think they'll surprise anyone. And the second question is it only between us? And that means in your mind, in your fantasies, having a DVD, looking at a picture on a computer screen, anything that brings another person, real or imagined, into the bedroom is wrong. And so you fight against that temptation. And I know that's a big battle for both men and women. And the third question is the trickiest, and that's what you kind of alluded to, and I believe what Mark Driscoll says as well, which is everything beyond that is permissible for me, but not everything is beneficial, not everything is loving, and not everything is I'm free to do because some things master me. Mm-hmm. And so those are the kind of things that a couple has to work through. And that means that one couple might decide something like oral sex is perfectly fine for them to enjoy. It's beneficial for them. It's loving for them. Another couple might decide that because of, for example, sexual abuse in the past, a woman is just not able to enjoy that. In that case, it's not loving for a husband to say, well, you have to do this to please me. And so there's the spirit of, is this building our love? Is this something that is enriching our time together? Or is it something that is becoming a demand from one person to another? I would say that on one issue, I probably would pretty heavily differ with Mark Driscoll, and that's anal sex. Mm. All the research I've done looking at the medical ramifications of that are that this is not beneficial to the body, that it's actually very harmful. And so my position on that one would be that that's not beneficial for a married couple.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, this is all just great direction, Julie, and I think very helpful. And just to help, you know, normalize the process of heading into marriage and recognizing that, you know, all of us can intellectually say sex is a good thing, but I think there was a lot of fear around it. And like you said, you know, I love the way Ted Cunningham says it. You know, he was told growing up that, you know, sex is dirty and bad and wrong and you should save it for marriage. You know, that kind of idea of, you know, the ultra conservatives tried to tell him. So I want to know, you know, hopefully everyone out there has some kind of a friend or a mentor or someone that they feel is going to be open enough on this to really talk with them and kind of get down to particulars and any question they might have. But what would be your recommendation, Julie, for if someone does have questions or just next steps of where to get specific answers on things, any resources or any direction you can give them?
Well, we answer all these kind of questions on our website, authenticnmc.com. Okay. We have a whole section called Help Me With, and there's really no question we won't answer. But if you're going into your wedding night, I would recommend that you take a book like No More Headaches, because people ask me, you know, what's normal? And what I can tell you is it's normal to run into some roadblock. And you don't know what that might be. It might be that that you can't consummate the marriage, or it might be that one of you just freaks out. It might be that there's physical pain. Whatever that roadblock might be in your on your honeymoon and in those first 6 months of marriage, you need to know that it's normal to experience an obstacle. What is key is how you as a couple address that obstacle. Do you work as a team or do you start blaming each other? And a resource that can pull you together as a team in terms of, okay, let's solve this problem together. Let's seek the Lord's wisdom on it. That's going to help you down the road look back on that and say, you know what? We overcame that and we can overcome the next one too.
Okay. So for your wedding night, you are going to need lingerie, candles, a copy of No More Headaches, and your iPad so that during the middle of this, you can say, excuse me, look it up.
Dr. Julie, help.
Yeah. I need to consult here for a moment. Excuse me. Pause. You know, no, that's good. But I think that is just, I mean, it's, you know, it's a normal process. As you said, it's, you're going to grow throughout your married life in this. You know, this isn't going to be some sexual explosion the first night of just amazingness. Do not believe what you have been told. And so I think that's really helpful, Julie. Thanks so much for weighing in on that.
Oh, it's been my pleasure.
Well, again, we've been talking to Dr. Julie Slattery. Again, she just referenced No More Headaches. That is a book a little bit we've been referring to here. And I would recommend that as well as her website, authenticintimacy.com. So make sure you check that out and let us know. Weigh in on the blog. I mean, if you have fears around having this conversation or you feel, again, this is a great example. We just talked about mentoring. mentoring a couple weeks ago, why you need to have other people in your life, because you need to have a place, a safe place that you can go to talk through these things and get questions answered and feel like you're not navigating all of this alone, or heaven forbid, with only HBO as your guide. let's avoid that. So thanks so much, Julie, for being part of this.
Oh, it's been a pleasure.